Good morning and welcome to Catholic Views. I'm Jerry Klein. Thanks for joining us. Today on the program, we're going to talk a bit about Memorial Day. We're going to have a nice visit with Chris Motes, who is both a veteran and still involved in the military as well. And we're also going to talk about his work as the director of the South Dakota Catholic Conference, which ties in nicely, I think, to our conversation about Memorial Day. Please stick around for that. Gene Young will have news for us in just a bit. First, the readings, though, for this Sunday. Brianna Wingen with the first and second reading, and Deacon Bill Radio with the gospel.
A reading from the Acts of the Apostles. Some who had come down from Judea were instructing the brothers, "Unless you are circumcised according to the Mosaic practice, you cannot be saved." Because there arose no little dissension and debate by Paul and Barnabas with them, it was decided that Paul, Barnabas, and some of the others should go up to Jerusalem to the apostles and elders about this question. The apostles and elders, in agreement with the whole church, decided to choose representatives and to send them to Antioch with Paul and Barnabas. The ones chosen were Judas, who was called Barsabbas, and Silas, leaders among the brothers. This is the letter delivered by them. "The apostles and the elders, your brothers, to the brothers in Antioch, Syria, and Cilicia of Gentile origin, greetings. Since we have heard that some of our number, who went out without any mandate from us, have upset you with their teachings and disturbed your peace of mind, we have with one accord decided to choose representatives and to send them to you along with our beloved Barnabas and Paul, who have dedicated their lives to the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. So we are sending Judas and Silas, who will also convey this message by word of mouth. It is the decision of the Holy Spirit and of us not to place on you any burden beyond these necessities, namely to abstain from meat sacrificed to idols, from blood, from meats of strangled animals, and from unlawful marriage. If you keep free of these, you will be doing what is right. Farewell." The word of the Lord. A reading from the book of Revelation. "The angel took me in spirit to a great high mountain, and showed me the holy city Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God. It gleamed with splendor of God. Its radiance was like that of a precious stone, like jasper, clear as crystal. It had a massive high wall, with 12 gates where 12 angels were stationed, and on which names were inscribed, the names of the 12 tribes of the Israelites. There were 3 gates facing east, 3 north, 3 south, and 3 west. The wall of the city had 12 courses of stone as its foundation, on which were inscribed the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. I saw no temple in the city, for its temple is the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb. The city had no need for sun or moon to shine on it, for the glory of God gave it light, and its lamp was the Lamb." The word of the Lord.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to John. Jesus said to his disciples, "Whoever loves me will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our dwelling with him. Whoever does not love me does not keep my words, yet the word you hear is not mine, but that of the Father who sent me. I have told you this while I am with you. The Advocate, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you everything and remind you of all that I told you. Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give it to you. Do not let your hearts be troubled or afraid. You heard me tell you I am going away, and I will come back to you. If you loved me, you would rejoice that I am going to the Father, for the Father is greater than I. And now I have told you this before it happens, so that when it happens, you may believe." The Gospel of the Lord.
And now with a look at news highlights from this past week from the Bishop's Bulletin, here's Gene Young.
Thanks, Jerry. In the news this morning, St. Thomas More Parish in Brookings is growing its education offerings in the years ahead. Father Terry Anderson, pastor at St. Thomas More Parish, recently received approval from Bishop Paul Swain to expand the school. A preschool has been in place at St. Thomas More for 16 years. The parish's elementary school was created 2 years ago as a kindergarten class. Today, St. Thomas More has students attending preschool, junior kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grade. With the approval, the school will add second grade next year and third grade the following year. You can read and see more about St. Thomas More school expansion in the May edition of the Bishop's Bulletin in homes across the diocese right now and online at www.sfcatholic.org. In other news, during his installation ceremony as the new Archbishop of Washington, D.C., Archbishop Wilton D. Gregory acknowledged the struggles that have recently impacted the Catholic Church and urged Catholic leaders and laity not to lose faith. "We stand at a defining moment for this local faith community," he said in his homily during Mass at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, stressing that our recent sorrow and shame do not define us, but should chasten the Archdiocese to continue the work ahead. The Archbishop, reflecting on the day's gospel reading about the apostles who had grown fearful with turbulent weather at sea, said the narrative is a worthy metaphor for us as people of faith who've been tossed about by waves of unsettling revelations. The former leader of the Atlanta Archdiocese, who also had served as the Bishop of Belleville, Illinois, and as an auxiliary Bishop of Chicago, did not mention the sexual abuse crisis by name, but clearly he didn't have to. Steps to open avenues for people-to-people diplomacy would go a long way to tamp down tensions between the United States and Iran, said a U.S. representative of Pax Christi International. "We need to expose a more humane face to people who know America only through our military and through the Pentagon and the State Department. There are other Americans who respond in different ways," Douglas Hotstetter, Pax Christi International advocacy representative at the U.N., told Catholic News Service this week. Hostetter, a Mennonite, said he feared an outbreak of violence as the U.S. deployed an aircraft carrier strike force in the Persian Gulf. He called for President Donald Trump and Iranian leaders to ease their threats and pursue ways to exchange, that is, medical professionals, educators, historians, and even religious leaders who could return their respective homelands to share what they have seen and learned. The Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops called on Governor Ron DeSantis to commute the death sentence, that is, to life in prison for a man scheduled to be executed for a 1984 murder. Robert Joseph Long, who is 65, is scheduled to be executed soon, 35 years after his conviction of the slaying of 22-year-old Michelle Sims. He was also convicted of killing at least seven other women in the Tampa area in the 1980s, but received life terms in those cases. The bishop's appeal for commutation came this week in a letter to DeSantis from Michael Sheedy, executive director of the Florida Conference of Catholic Bishops. "Although he caused much harm, society has been safe from his aggressive acts in the decades of his incarceration," Sheedy wrote. "Without taking his life, society can be protected while he endures the alternative sentence of life without the possibility of parole." With a look at the news from this past week, I'm Gene Young reporting from the Bishop's Bulletin Newsroom.
One last time, Gene.
Exactly. It's hard to believe.
Appreciate that. Let's move on to our interview. This morning on Catholic Views, we are joined by Christopher Motes, who is the executive director of the South Dakota Catholic Conference. He's also a active member of our military, I guess, of the National Guard at this time, or Reserve at this point. But on this Memorial Day, when most people are hearing this edition of Catholic Views, I thought it really appropriate to talk about some of those things related to those who serve in our military, to those who have given their life to protect and defend those of us at home all these years. That's what Memorial Day really is about. At its core, we celebrate a lot of different things on Memorial Day these days, but I kind of wanted to start with that, Chris, and grateful. Again, you maybe you could clarify for us. I know you were active military for a while, and now you're in reserve. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I served active duty in the Marines, Marine Infantry Officer, from 2005 to 2010, in the Marine Reserves from 2011 to 2014, and since 2014, I've been a lawyer in the Air National Guard.
Mm-hmm. So you've seen a lot of the kind of different phases of that service, but in the midst of all that, you've been around soldiers. And I think there's something about that. I've had this conversation with others who have served in the military, and there is something about that camaraderie of being a part a group like that.
That's right. Yeah, it's camaraderie is a great word for it. You know, we've heard the term band of brothers, a fellowship. There's a there is just a deep and I would call it an intimacy amongst these sorts of folks, based on shared experiences, shared values, shared goals,
shared training,
absolutely.
And what does that mean to you?
You know, I had a difficult circumstance in 2008 and lost a Marine. A Marine was killed in combat. And many of the guys in the platoon went out and got tattoos that quoted the Gospel of John. No greater love has a man than this, than to lay down one's life for one's friends. So that's a real encouragement, you know. That's like it's kind of in a sense we can think about it in as love in action in a very meaningful and real way for people that are called to that sort of service.
Yeah, yeah, and this sense of the camaraderie or the brotherhood, I see that kind of regardless of the age. I mean, I've known men who served in World War II, obviously, and served in the Korean War, Vietnam War, other known people in kind of all of those ages. It doesn't really seem to matter. Those of who are younger who have served more recently, either in the Middle East somewhere or in Afghanistan, perhaps, that feeling, it's kind of a universal thing, isn't it?
It is. And I'll tell you, you know, in the different services have their different unique cultures too. But still, if I see an old timer with a Marine hat on, I go up and say, Semper Fidelis, you know, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. And then we get to chat a little bit, you know, where were you stationed? What'd you do?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Perfect stranger. He's, you know, I see the hat, see the t-shirt, see the sticker. How you doing, brother?
My father-in-law is 89 years old, served in the Navy, in about the time of the Korean War. He didn't actually get to Korea, but I'm telling you, the stories that he tells from the time that he was in the service, the vividness of his memory of all the different places that he served, you know, whether it was Pensacola or up in Newfoundland or, you know, wherever he was, San Diego, wherever he was, the vividness of the stories, it doesn't lose an ounce of that through the years.
I don't know why that is. I can tell you the exact day of the exact month of the exact year that I was in a particular place or joined a particular group. Or I mean, it's like these days just kind of stick in your mind with real vividness, like it was just yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. And again, so that's and then I know there's guys that really don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, and I always want to respect that too.
Sure. I think that, you know, for some people it's a bit of, you know, you maybe wouldn't understand it, and there's a fear of, oh, you might not understand it. Or maybe it's a bit like, well, you know, this is a little treasure chest that I have here, and I don't give away the key to the treasure chest lightly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you gotta earn it a little bit.
Yeah.
Maybe some of that.
Some of that. But maybe to another brother.
Yeah. You've already got the key.
They might open up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I worry about that a little bit for those that aren't able to share, because I do think there is something in holding that all inside that, you know, maybe for some folks it doesn't bother them, but I think for some folks it kind of does.
Yeah. I mean, and I think there's a kind of a deep human truth in there that we all have a desire to know and be known, and that it's sharing things of deep importance to us it's good for us as humans to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that concern is real.
Yeah. Did you ever, because I know your faith is something that's always been very important to you as well, even as a young man, ever a conflict with that, ever a concern about that?
No, there wasn't for me. You know, it's, you kind of just know the ground you stand on and you have confidence in it. And, you know, I do have memories of on Friday afternoons, I'm about to release my young Marines into the cities and villages of Southern California. And it was kind of a customary thing to give a little safety brief for the weekend.
Yeah.
And part of that safety brief might be something along the lines of, you know, don't get pregnant, or just cultural sort of things that are really not extraordinary for people concerning, I would, my safety brief just included simple words, you know, treat young women with respect.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a pretty simple thing, consistent with my faith that didn't, you know, there were real opportunities. One of the things about being an officer especially is not only to be a tactical expert in sort of the weapons at your disposal, but also to be sort of the unit's ethical conscience, if
mm-hmm.
you will.
Mm-hmm. Almost a father figure.
Almost a father figure.
At a very young age.
Yeah. you know, I have a memory of late fall 2007. It's a little before Christmas, maybe. And there was an Iraqi man who had been a prisoner. He was maybe in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I don't know exactly, but my job was to take him back to the village, take mm-hmm. him back home.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting in the back of one of my vehicles, and it's like in the 30s. It's really cold. And he's just kind of sitting there in nothing but a kind of a lightweight sort of cotton gown. And to just see him sitting there, it was simple. It was something so simple. But I just said to one of the guys, like, hey, there's a blanket right there. Would you give him the blanket? And he wrapped up in the blanket, and then he was warm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's simple stuff.
Yeah, simple stuff. So let's talk a little bit about this Memorial Day observance. It's obviously been around a long time. I believe it came to be sometime after the Civil War as a way to honor those who had served in that capacity. And it's eventually, it was not been a national holiday all those years, but the tradition of it has been around a long time.
Yeah, and I think in a special way to remember those who have served, but in a particular way, those who have given their lives to,
mm-hmm.
you know, tradition of going to visit the cemetery.
Yeah.
To put out some flowers or flags and pray for those people in a particular way.
Yeah. The national cemeteries, I know, always, all of them do the best they can to make the cemetery look fantastic for events like this.
And there's really, you know, sometimes we get a bit numb to our own spiritual side, but there's nothing really that fills me with more reverence and awe than just seeing, you know, the cemetery full of the flags
mm-hmm.
or to even see just a display by your local Legion or VFW. You know, you get the guys out there in the hats with the rifles, and they're just paying such respect to those that have gone before. Like, I don't know how you can see that and not be filled with a sense of like, oh, wow, I'm part of this big grand thing. And others have really given a lot to give me this gift.
Mm-hmm. I presume you've been to a number of the national cemeteries probably in the course of your service and in the course of the years since. I've been able to be at a number of them myself because I find them so moving. Certainly Arlington is one of the most profound places you can ever visit.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also at one in Hawaii called Punch Bowl Cemetery, which is it's just a phenomenal place because it is literally in the bowl of an old volcano. That's where the cemetery sits. And the location of it is just, again, just makes you kind of what you were saying. It kind of gives you the chills almost to see that.
Yeah.
Talk about your own experience at national cemeteries.
Well, there's one. My wife's grandfather was in the Air Force. He's buried at the Federal Cemetery on Point Loma, which is in San Diego. There's a kind of a peninsula that wraps around the bay. The Federal Cemetery is at the tip of the peninsula, a couple hundred feet up from the water, and it's the highest point for miles around. To the west, you're looking out over the ocean. To the east, you're looking over the harbor and the city.
Mm.
And to just sort of look down on all of it, or to be below and look up on the cemetery, it's just like, it is so fitting that these men and women in their place of repose are literally over us. You know, they're it's almost like it's a very peaceful thing.
Yeah, yeah. The other one, of course, I think about in South Dakota, of course, is Black Hills National Cemetery.
Yep.
And I think that
yep.
also is just a spectacularly beautiful place.
It is.
And such a meaningful place for so many whose family members, you know, are buried there. I had a chance in the last few years, a good friend of mine whose father had served and is buried there, and then his mother passed away, and he hadn't been able to be back after, you know, her gravestone was fixed, and to be able to take a picture and send it to him, just all kinds of meaningful things that are there.
I like, you look at it from a distance, and it's very military precision. You have these rows.
Yeah.
All the stones look the same. It's just so orderly and disciplined. And then you get closer and you realize they're individuals. It's a lot of crosses, but there are things aside from crosses that reflect the various cultures.
Yep.
And then you look even closer and you can see the various names, and it's like, wow, what a melting pot of names.
Oh yeah.
And you can see the different stratifications of rank, because the rank goes on the headstone too, private, general.
All buried together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a beautiful thing. Well, I wanted to do this conversation, Chris, in order to talk about some of these things, because I think it's real easy for us to miss it. You know, I think Memorial Day has become a place where we honor all of our dead, certainly our family members and so forth as well. But it's really important, I think, to remember where it started and the reason why.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I don't necessarily hear the military guys asking for that. I don't hear you asking for that. But I think to be noticed and to be remembered, again, particularly those who have given their lives, pretty important to do.
Yeah.
So, all right. We do have some time left. And since you are the executive director of the South Dakota Catholic Conference as well, it'd be foolish not to take this opportunity to talk a little bit about what's going on in that part of your world. As well. It's, I know kind of in a sense, the off season, or some people would say it's kind of the off season because, you're not in legislative session right now, but, kind of to the point of what you do, your work doesn't necessarily get captured in the legislative session.
No, that's right. There's a lot going on, and it's really a nice segue or transition, if you will, from talking about Memorial Day. I'm a Chesterton fan. He said a true soldier fights not because he hates what's in front of him, but because he loves what's behind him.
Ooh.
So it's like,
I like that.
What's behind me? There's all this great stuff to love. There are all these great people to love. And there's a lot going on in the realm of law and politics, even outside of the legislative session in South Dakota. You know, one of the I love my job. I've got a great job. I get to interact with a lot of great people. One of the nice things about my job is being able to actually interact a bit with legislators outside of the pressure cooker of peer.
Absolutely.
Because it can feel like, you know, the whole world's under the microscope. You know, lobbyists are pushing stuff on them. And it's like it is kind of a time crunch. They're all civilian legislators.
Yep. And they have this massive bills, and they've got to go through that hopper. And
yep,
it's got a lot of pressure.
500 bills to go through in just, you know, 2 months. So to actually kind of connect with people in a bit lower key sort of way outside
more
of
human,
the session,
more kind of human, a more human way. Yeah.
Let's visit. We've got a lot in common.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about legislation or politics, we can. But I get to ask fun questions like, why did you want to go into politics? What do you like about it? What motivates you? What are the values that you think are the most important for our life together in society?
I love that image you just used of the Chesterton, of all you have behind you, kind of in a sense propelling us forward, right? Is that the image?
Yeah, but yeah. It's
the push of Jesus Christ, I think.
That is. It's you know, and when you're in peer, it can feel a bit like pushing a rope because there are all these other things going on. But outside of that, we can take a step back, reassess, engage as humans outside of, again, kind of the petri dish that's up there. And it's fun, Dud. It's a fun and great part of my job. So,
I'm going to have you say a bit more about that in terms of why that's important. And my hunch is that it's important because if we kind of understand the background, if we understand maybe the philosophy or the theology, even in our case, behind a certain thing, it makes it easier to understand why the church might be looking at things in a particular way.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and my two cents for what is, you know, what does the church really bring to the table, so to speak, to modern politics? Saint Paul VI, you know, he said that the church is an expert in humanity. And as technology advances more and more quickly, there's something called Moore's Law. It was first articulated in 1970. This computer scientist, microchip processors. Moore's Law is that processing speeds double every 2 years. And that's borne itself out to be true, more or less, thus far. We could apply the same principle to just technology more broadly. Technology is accelerating, and it's kind of pulling, what does it mean to be human? It's kind of pulling at the edges of this a little bit.
Yeah.
The church has thought about these things, and the church has got, I think, in a certain sense, is the conscience of society as we engage with these questions and issues. What does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a woman in the 21st century? What are the appropriate limits to what we can do?
Yep.
Should we?
Yep.
Yeah. So, and these questions are bearing themselves out in political spheres.
Yeah. So that the backdrop again helps you to, if you have the backdrop and you've had these kind of conversations, then the specifics make more sense as you're talking in the pressure of the day.
Yeah, that's right.
And at it's least like, you hope so.
That's right. And it's, you know, I know Chris because we had a cup of coffee together.
Yeah.
And he's not going to bite me if he asked to visit for a couple minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Exactly right. Well, again, and I know the other thing you do, and probably don't have time to dive into this, but I know you answer a lot of questions. People, you know, in parishes and across our parishes across South Dakota. You're a great resource for answering the kind of questions that people might have.
Yeah, that's right. If people want to engage one-on-one, I'm always available via email or phone, but also happy, you know, to visit parishes, give a little talk. Speaking of technology, I had a lot of fun Skyping with the youth group out in Pier.
There you go.
For kind of a Q&A during one of their nights.
Give us your website quick, Chris.
It's sdcatholicconference.org.
All right, look it up. Check out what he's got going on. And Chris, thank you for your service to our country. And God bless you on this Memorial Day.
Thank you.
Gene, I mentioned it briefly. Your last program.
It is. We're moving on to retirement. I'm going to join my wife in retirement, and we're going to hit the road sometimes.
If you missed last week's program, I encourage you to go back
online
and listen to it because it's found on sfcatholic.org.
Yeah, I heard that guest was really good.
He was fantastic. And Gene, just thanks for everything.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been a pleasure. It's been a blessing.
Run. Really enjoyed having you here. We also, of course, talked about Memorial Day. This is that weekend. Hope everyone has a wonderful and safe A Memorial
it's a very
Day
special
we,
time.
As we honor our dead, particularly those from the military. And just a final word, ordinations this week.
Ooh, big time.
On Thursday and Friday, 11 o'clock both days. Diaconate on Thursday, priesthood on Friday. And it'll be streamed online as well. That's our time for Catholic Views this morning. Thanks for being with us. We'll be back next Sunday.